See, I was going to do a short, snappy intro, but then I forgot. Well, I have no idea how to start these things. This is the Eden Gathering Podcast.
Whoop, whoop.
Thank you for whooping. That is the voice of Helen Bolton. This is the Eden Gathering Podcast, and you are listening to Book Club. Insert theme tune.
Let's talk about books with Ben. Let's talk about now and then. Let's talk about all the good books and the bad books that we've read. Let's talk about books. Yeah.
What was the bit you whispered there?
I whispered an edit note to Alex to say insert
sorry.
The theme tune.
Oh.
But now you've just given away all the production
I'm so
secrets.
Sorry.
Have you heard
so
the
sorry.
Theme tune?
Yeah. Do-do-do-do-do. Something like that.
No.
I haven't heard the thing.
No, it's
I
really
have,
good.
But I don't remember it.
It's really good, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really good. Kind of written by someone else. It's like a parody, isn't it? But then Alex kind of did something with it. Sam put some killer vocals down. And it's really turned into something that's got quite a following.
Amazing.
We'll be releasing it on Spotify pretty soon when the album comes out.
Really good.
So, Helsey, this is your second time on the Eden Gavra podcast.
Yep, just been here once before.
Yeah, and you were doing teachery bits. So
yeah, it was
if
the
people
end of
don't
term.
Know who you are, they should go back and listen to that one first. Or is this one going to be better?
This one will be different, I guess.
Wow, that is someone that is filled with confidence about how this podcast is going to go. But we are back. This is where you're sitting right now. History was made.
Was it?
This is where we recorded the first ever Eden Gavra
wow.
podcast. Can you sense it in the room?
I really can. Special? I feel like I'm in some kind of, media studio.
Yeah, I mean, it is a state in here. Alex is filming a video in this space later. And he's just like, oh, can we record the podcast before that? And he's got, I mean, I feel like I'm on some sort of set of some really, really low budget
I'm going to be in the video.
Yeah, oh, and you're going to be in the video.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
are you going to be talking about?
Kid stuff.
But from a Forge capacity.
Absolutely.
So for those of you that don't know, Helen leads one of our locations in Debenham. That's not how you say it, is it? I don't know why I said it weird.
What, Debenham?
Yeah, Debenham. And do you enjoy that?
Yeah, I do enjoy that. Yeah, good. Very much so.
And you split the rest of your time with?
School. So I'm a primary school teacher and location leader here at the church. Yeah, two jobs.
And a fond reader?
I really love reading and I wish I read more. I used to read loads. Just time often restricts it, which is not a great excuse.
Yeah, whenever I ask what you're up to, you've always got loads on. You've got so many friends.
Do you think?
Yeah, I do. You're like, oh, I'm seeing this person, seeing this mate. We're going out here, we're doing this. And I'm like, man, Helen's got way more friends than me. That's fine.
I'm probably twice as old. I've got accumulated
it's
more.
Twice as nice.
Oh, thanks very much.
So, Helen, you are actually the same age as Tess Daly, I believe. Is that...
this is a fact.
Yeah.
And me and Tess.
She's so young.
And Kylie.
Kylie. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. We're all the same age.
You have brought in a book today.
I have. I've brought in a book... that I read over the summer, and it's strange because I was given it by two people to read and then someone bought it for me.
Oh, what, independent?
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of people have spoken to me about this book. My sister-in-law lent it to me.
What's it called? How to Come to Terms with Your Age?
For me and Kat Daly. It's called This Is Going to Hurt.
Nice.
So it's it describes itself as The Secret Diaries of a Junior Doctor, written by Adam Kay.
So two different people said you would like this book.
Yeah, yeah.
Why did that come up then?
Well, I think probably...
You've been moaning about the NHS or something.
No, not at all. I think you asked me if I read much and I want to read loads and loads and I just don't get around to it. So whenever a holiday comes up, I think I'd probably say to people, oh, have you got any books
what are you doing?
I can
read? What
are
you reading? What have you read?
Yeah. So a couple of people said, read this book. My brother is a real reader and he said, this is a brilliant book, so well written. And then my sister-in-law bought it for me and said, have this book and keep it.
That's fantastic.
So that was kind
of... So your brother recommended it and then your sister-in-law, so his wife, bought it for you. Do you reckon they like had a conversation? You're like, I'll tear up to say like, oh, She'll love this book because I've already bought it for her, and then she'll be really grateful.
I think they'd read it. But I think actually, which is testament to the book, I think she was going to lend it to me. She said, I'll send it over, I'll lend it to you. And then when it came, it was a brand new one. And she said, actually, I've bought it for you because I think this is the sort of book you're going to want to keep.
So what, after having read it then, what, so make this about you then. What? Why do you think people thought that you would like it? What does it say about you?
That's such a good question, Ben. It's really well written. It's really easy to read. Mm-hmm. And it was an amazing balance of entertaining and shocking.
Mm.
So it was a really light read and it made me laugh out loud at times because it was so funny.
It's a bit rude, but, right? You were saying in the other room it's got to be swearies, isn't it?
He's not rude, but he's so he's a junior doctor and then he specialises in maternity and gynae. So there's lots of female-y bit stories within it. Bits getting stuck and...
Oh.
Moving on. And also, you know, it's a book that hits home a bit because it's about having babies and that sort of thing. So lots of it I could resonate with.
You've had babies.
I've had two of them. But very, very funny stories within it. But also, yeah, it's a true story. This is this guy's diary of training to be a doctor and being a doctor. I thought I knew how stretched the NHS were.
Yeah, but you got no
idea. I had no idea. Mm. It is absolutely shocking.
But so does this person, Adam Kay, is that the person?
Is that a real name?
Yeah,
that's him. Yeah.
Because surely you get in trouble for like sharing this stuff.
He's not a doctor anymore.
Right. So, spoiler. But like, is there like rules that he breaks by revealing this stuff? I guess it's not specific, is it? But
it is quite specific in places.
Oh, really? Well, like names of hospitals.
Yeah. I think the most...
Not names of patients.
No. No, he just abbreviated to initials. I think I was quite shocked at what I discovered in it, but I guess what he has done is put pen to paper and put it out there and got it published. And presumably you can talk to any doctor and find out this is the truth. And that's what I've done. I've got a couple of friends that are GPs and I've talked to them about it and they've said, yeah, this is what it is.
Really?
This is the truth
of
it.
So it's struck a chord with so many people.
Definitely. I honestly feel I feel like I'm quite a busy person. I will never say I've had a really, really busy day having read this.
Really?
It's
life and death stuff, right?
Exactly. So I might do a really long day sometimes at work. Mm. And I think particularly with teaching, it's not the sort of job that you can just like stop if you want to. You can't say like, just have a break here now. Let's just get a coffee. Let's just take some time out. I mean, some days are just non-stop.
Even going to the toilet. I can't even really be in charge of
sometimes
when you go to
the
toilet.
Yeah. But it's not life and death.
Yeah.
And so that's exactly it, that when he is really stretched and when he's done his whole shift and then he doesn't go home for 6 hours afterwards, it's because somebody's life is in his hands. And so it is shocking, all the things he missed, weddings and funerals.
Wow.
And this isn't the top brain surgeon in the country, is it?
This is just a normal.
And I think that was part
doctor.
Of my shock that he only was a doctor for 6 years. And so I think it takes virtually that long to train. And then he did it for 6 years and then decided it just wasn't worth it.
So why is the book written? Was it written to be a book or was it always just written as his personal diary or was it a blog? Like,
I guess
was
he
it
must
written with
have
the purpose
a
to release
real
or?
Interest in writing because the fact that he was keeping a diary and so he's been able to go back to his diaries.
But it feels like an authentic diary. It doesn't feel like I'm writing a diary, but one day this is going to be.
No, it really does. It really does. Yeah. So some snippets are really short, some are long, some are really funny, some are really heartrending. It's a real mix.
And it's presented like a diary, is it?
Yeah.
It's about as long as Chamber of Secrets, I think.
Yeah, so you would, yeah, you would just open the page and you would get Monday the 14th of May. Yeah. And so obviously it doesn't go day by day by day.
Can't be that busy if he's written a diary.
Pardon?
Can't be that busy if he's written a diary. That's a joke. If you ever listen to this, Adam, you're a hero.
I think as well, I think maybe they're meant to keep notes of stuff that goes on as well. So I think a lot of it's documented anyway.
So what were some standout bits for you? Why have you chosen to speak about this today?
I guess because I felt like it did really impact me. I think, I've been amazed at how many people I've asked them if they've read it. Do you know what I mean? I just kind of want to have conversations about it.
We even had that conversation in the office, didn't we? And three people out of seven or whatever.
I think Becky, who's done podcasts about books before, I think she's read it. And it was an easy read. It was something that I could just easily pick up and put down all over the summer.
Say their book of the year or something.
Book of the Year, National Book Awards Book of the Year.
Why have I never heard of this? I'm so uncultured.
You should. It's honestly, it's such an easy read. So you should read it. You'd love it.
Do you think it's like a perspective thing?
For me?
Yeah. Do you think it's like giving you, why it's attractional is because it belittles your stuff in a healthy way.
I think because the NHS... is something that we all come across at some shape or form, don't we? So it's not like I've read someone's diaries from an area of work that I'm never going to come across. Mm. I just think because we all tap into the NHS and I think we've all got a responsibility to know what it's like and how stretched they are. And sometimes it was not so much about the hours that he was working, but it was the pressure that he was under, the responsibility that as a very, very young doctor, he would often be responsible for the entire hospital.
Wow.
And so nurses and medical staff were all coming to him, all got their own emergency going on, and he needed to try and field it all.
Mm.
And sometimes it was the shock of what made you an expert.
Mm.
And sometimes he was going to things, procedures that he had perhaps done once before.
Wow.
Or had seen done.
Okay, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
It was frightening. It was shocking. There was almost this element. And I talked to my friend about this, who's a doctor, this whole area of, if you've seen it and then you've done it once, then you've become the expert.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So are there specific stories that really spoke to you in this book? You've got some post-its in
there.
I
put the post-its in a while ago, so I don't know if I can quite remember what they were. Let's have a quick look.
Oh, these aren't new post-its.
Well, I put it in on that previous date when I thought we were doing the podcast.
Oh yeah. This is the second time I tried to film the podcast.
Oh, so yeah. Some of them like just shocking. Should I read it to you?
Yeah,
this isn't funny.
Yeah.
This is just like a shocking part. One of the house officers turned up in A&E last night having attempted suicide with an overdose of antidepressants. There's a shared sense of numbness amongst the doctors. The only surprise is it doesn't happen more often. You're given huge responsibility, minimal supervision and absolutely no pastoral support. You work yourself to exhaustion, pushing yourself beyond what could be reasonably expected of you, and end up constantly feeling like you don't know what you're doing. Sometimes it just feels that way and you're actually doing fine, and sometimes you really don't know what you're doing. Happily, this occasion is the latter, and she'd taken a completely harmless dose of antidepressants. In any other profession, if someone's job drove them to attempt suicide, you'd expect some kind of inquiry into what had happened and a concerted effort to make sure it never happened again. Yet nobody said anything. We all just heard from friends, like we were in the small playground. I doubt we'd have got so much as an email if she'd died. I'm pretty unshockable, but I'll never cease to be amazed by hospitals' willful ineptitude when it comes to caring for their own staff.
My goodness.
That's shocking, isn't it?
So much.
That's really shocking.
The stuff in there that stands out to me is like, we can only really speak about what we can do about that. I'm not the Prime Minister. Some people think I'd make a good one.
I think you might excellent one, Ben.
I think I could probably be the best that we've got at the moment. Well, let's not get too political. But anyway, but like, we can't change that. But what we can do is be there for our friends who are doctors, offer them the, he called it pastoral support. Sometimes that's, you know, sometimes that's just understanding that if they've missed the wedding, that's not their fault.
Yeah.
Cooking meals, you know, all that sort of stuff. But like, just as patients, you know, if you've got a broken arm and it takes you a long, long time to be seen.
Absolutely.
You know, you've got a broken arm. Like,
They've been probably dealing with 6 other emergencies, many of which they might be not equipped to deal with 100%. Mm. They are firefighting the whole time. They were constantly making a call on what needs their attention.
But also, it absolutely terrifies me that we hold doctors, and I mean this in a respectful way, actually, in too high a regard.
Right.
Like, I would expect a doctor to know everything that, you know, about me, that they need to know to be able to.
Yeah.
But it sounds like, from what he's saying, it's like, sometimes we don't know what we're doing.
Yeah.
And that happens in a job.
Absolutely.
But I hold doctors in a different regard.
Yeah.
But, you know, like.
And I think sometimes that is compounded by being incredibly tired as well.
Mm.
So sometimes having to make decisions.
That is terrifying. I'm really just making my heart going,
Yeah. And yet decisions were being made at the top that had impact on them. So there was one really short little snippet in here, and sometimes he's quite tongue-in-cheek about it, about the fact that if they were on night shifts, there would be a room where they could grab some sleep if they could manage to. And then someone much higher up made the call that actually that was unnecessary and there was no need for there to be a bed for them available at all.
What?
And so then the doctors would, if they'd got friends on other wards where there was a spare bed on a ward, then they would see if they could persuade them to let them keep in there for an hour or so, because there was nowhere
in a patient. Well, like, in,
yeah,
but you know, there's no spare beds in hospitals.
Exactly. Yeah. So they took that away.
Well, has anything happened since this book?
I don't know, actually.
I'm sitting here and I'm like, well, I can imagine, like, you were the same when you first read it or heard about it. Like, your jaw hits the floor. People driving around right now with their jaws on the floor, just thinking.
It really made me think, why is the NHS not being sorted out? Why is there not more money being poured into it? Terrible. Then I heard something on the news the other day just about overworked nurses, and I think it's really, it's given me
much. Is it
much
all the way down then?
I spoke to my friend recently, and so she's got a couple of, two of her children want to go into medicine.
Mm.
And I said to her, having read this book, I don't actually understand why anybody would want to go into this profession, not with that amount of pressure. And she completely understood that. And she said, and it makes me worry for my girls.
Yeah.
Because it's life and death stuff. If you make a big mistake because there's nobody else around and because it all falls to you and you haven't slept, that's massive,
but
isn't it?
But I guess, I mean, trying to be positive, and I don't have any place to say this, but I guess with the greatest risk comes the greatest reward as well.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure there are parts of, I mean, having saved someone's life or, you know, being able to tell a parent that you've saved their child's life and stuff like that, obviously.
Yeah. And that's exactly
must be the
what
only thing
comes
that
out.
Keeps him going. Sort
yeah,
of thing.
Definitely. And that's, yeah, that's why he would say that it's a real calling to do that job. And that's
so is he
why...
a Christian?
No.
Has he got any faith background?
Didn't come across with any.
Yeah.
No.
It's just some of the languages. I don't know, perhaps if you feel like sense of purpose and calling, and that is quite Christian language.
Yeah.
Being mentioned about like pastoral care, I would still say call that quite a Christian term, pastoral care. But because they do have like chaplains and stuff in hospitals. But again, if you can't even get a chance to sleep, getting a chance to get some counselling or something.
It definitely, what did come out was absolute love of the job and the buzz of it as well. And I think, you know, for some people, and I think for him that would have been true, that there is that fine line between getting a real kick out of the busyness And then it just going too far and being too much.
Absolute heroes. And it's like, okay, doctors, we would think earn a good wage, but I don't think there's really a wage that can compensate that.
And actually quite often he was kind of citing examples of what it equates to if you work out the hours that they work. And he was talking about, you know, bus drivers and supermarket workers being on a very similar wage because of the hours he's working. So, And of course, he talked quite often about missing so much of life as well, all he was doing. He talked about one example in the book of, I think, left after a night shift and didn't actually manage to get home. He realised he got into his car and just fell asleep. He didn't and woke up in the morning, woke up because he was being rung to ask where he was. And he realised because he made this very funny in the book. He realised like he was already 10 minutes late for work and just like one sentence at the bottom. But that was okay because I don't seem to have driven home last night.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, just that tired. Just like sleeping, waking up, in. Yeah. Crazy.
You just don't hear. Why is this stuff?
I know.
Not being spoken, or is it? And I'm stupid.
I don't know. It's not a world that I kind of know many people in at all.
Because I know
really.
I've seen like junior doctors and that protesting and all that not long ago. Was that all kind of from this, or
maybe
is that about separate stuff? I don't know. I remember it being in the news really frequently, but as of this year, I mean, everything in the news is just Brexit, isn't it? But
yeah. Yeah.
Is it a money issue or a culture issue then, the problems?
I don't know whether there's an acceptance, do you know what I mean? When something happens like something for a long time, whether there's just an acceptance that that's just how it is. If you go into medicine, expect it to be like this, because I think it's been like this for a very long time. But yeah, presumably more money, more resources need to be poured into it so that this isn't everyone's experience.
Crazy. You got another page open there.
This is a funnier one, I think.
Oh yeah, let's finish off with a lighter note.
Moral maze. Patient AB is in labour and has a non-reassuring trace. She's on her third midwife of the shift, having hurled... Oh no, that isn't the one I wanted to read. Cut that, Alex. Talk amongst yourselves. I want to find one about... Putting in the last of the skin staples after an uncomplicated elective caesarean when the scrub nurse announces that there's a discrepancy in the swab count. One's unaccounted for. Don't panic, we tell ourselves, panicking. We check on the floor and inside the drapes, no swab. We rifle through the placenta and blood clots in the clinical waste bin like the world's most horrific bran tub, no swab. I call in Mr. Fortescue today on call. Today's on-call consultant to make the decision as to whether we reopen the patient or send her for an x-ray. Mr. Fortescue decides we should reopen and we wait for the anaesthetic. Oh, I can't read very well today. Mr. Fortescue decides we should reopen and we wait for the anaesthetist's epidural top-up to take effect. He tells me a story from a few years ago. An elderly woman presented to him in clinic complaining of lower abdominal pain. After performing various other investigations, he sent her for an x-ray. The principal finding was the presence of a spoon in her abdominal cavity. After asking various pertinent questions, have you ever eaten a spoon? Do you stick spoons up your vagina or rectum? It seemed unlikely the origin of the object would be discovered, but it was causing her pain and needed to be removed at open surgery under general anaesthetic. Sure enough, at surgery, nestled among her intestines and other gizzards was a dessert spoon.
Dessert spoon?
On removal, its only notable features were a number of scratches on the near surface and the words "Property of St. Theodore's Hospital" stamped onto the handle. Mr. Fortescue saw her on the ward post-operatively and they were each equally baffled as to how the spoon had somehow managed to backpack its way from St. Theodore's into her abdominal cavity. Her last contact with them, save for their spoon stirring her innards like a risotto, was a caesarean section back in the 1960s. Some correspondence with St. Theodore's followed where they firmly denied the routine surgical implantation of spoons, but were able to dig out the patient's notes. They were unrevealing spoon-wise. It seemed very few doctors who empty canteens of cutlery into patients' stomachs are going to document it, but it did they did provide the name of the surgeon. The gentleman was long since dead, but Mr. Fortescue was eventually able to speak to someone who trained under him to ask if his old boss was in the habit of breaking mid-caesarean for a spot of baked Alaska. Amazingly, this revealed the explanation. The surgeon in question routinely used a sterilized dessert spoon when sewing up the rectus sheath to protect underlying structures. On this occasion, the spoon had clearly fallen in and he'd just decided, sod it, plowed on.
That is amazing.
It was quite funny, some of the things that the guy did, almost as a kind of rebellion against the system, or to annoy, not to annoy, but to get his own back on patients that had been really difficult at times. Do you want me to read you this one?
It's bold for admitting this stuff, isn't it?
I know.
Go on, one more.
Moral maze. Patient AB is in labour and has non-reassuring trace. She's on her third midwife of the shift, having hurled racist abuse at the first two black midwives who had been looking after her. One more episode like that, she's been warned and she'll be kicked off the labour ward. My SHO has reviewed the CTG and advises me that AB needs a cesarean section. Because I'm not entirely sure of the legality of following through with the threat to boot her out, the Indian SHO and I choose to ignore the fact that the patient has made racist comments to her too. On reviewing the patient, I agree with the SHO C-section it is. I transfer her to theatre and decide to stay tight-lipped about the fact that I'm actually Jewish. The operation is straightforward and the little boy is delivered safely, presumably to be immediately dressed up in a baby's first KKK hood and given a rattle in the shape of a burning cross. But this is the sort of thing he says he does. If the patient had a dolphin tattoo on her right groin, would it be so bad if my skin incision was slightly wider than usual and I had no choice but to decapitate the dolphin? I could say, if pushed by an official inquiry, that I'd been worried the baby was larger than average and it had made sense to have a good-sized operative field. And on closing the skin, would it be so bad if the wound didn't approximate very well for some strange, almost entirely unprovable reason, leaving the dolphin's head positioned a good inch to the left of its body?
Of course, for legal reasons, he did not. Oh. That. He's just talking hypothetically, of
not
course.
Sure.
Thanks for coming in, Helsey.
Thanks that for talking to me.
That is flipping amazing.
You should read it, Ben. Yeah. You'd love it.
Everyone comes on and says that I should read a book, and I think I really do want to read that. I've still never really read a book.
You could read this easily because, look, you could just like pick up a day at a time.
I could just do a day for a day. How many days is it? Is it 6 years?
Yeah, I'm going to leave it on your desk. And every day you could just like read another day.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that.
Oh, well, and then you'll be interviewing me in some sort of parallel universe.
And we could have like literature discussions about the book.
And be really like, oh, dessert spoon. Like we'll have a little laugh at when we see a dessert spoon together.
I guarantee if you were reading this book, you would be reading quotes out in the office. Really? And you would be going, what about that bit when? Definitely.
Brilliant. Oh, thanks for coming in. Are we doing the theme tune again at the end, or do we do that? No, we just do that.
Do that thing where you say, play the music, Alex. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can do that.
Play the music, Alex.